mentioned yourself, the prophet, he married all of these daughters from different tribes, not because they were the more righteous, or the most riches, or whatever practical benefit there was. No, because you set yourself to attract these tribes, not to himself only, but to Islam. And that is the prophethood, that is the prophetic mission, to do tabligh, preach to the people. And the prophets and also imams, they did whatever they could to do just that. And with that, we will end today's program because we are out of time. I thank the dear Sheikh for shedding some light on this very historical and important event, And I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. Until next time, fi amanillah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
Communique.
Whenever people talk about the war in Ukraine, they tend to focus on what's happening inside Ukraine. You know, the battles taking place in Mariupol, the Donbass, or the outskirts of Kiev. But that's just half the story. The war in Ukraine is really a catalyst. It's pushing the world towards a multipolar order. Now, right this moment, we are seeing a global realignment. And I don't just mean the shifting of alliances. We're talking about the future of energy sales, global supply chains, the redistribution of power from the concentrated hands of a few in the West towards Asia. This is a seismic shift, both in size and nature, that could very well determine the future of international politics for the next decade. Now, if I told you 2 months ago that EU member states would be paying for their gas in rubles, you would never have believed me. And yet here we are, where the dominance of the US dollar, of the euro, are being challenged. And while the Western press want you to believe that the whole world is united and has the exact same position on Russia, it couldn't be further from the truth. So maybe it really is time to take a hard look at what the so-called international community really means and where it's headed. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. The United States of America has been the global superpower during the 21st century up until this point, and for the better part of the last century. And one of the things that the US derives much of its power from is its currency, the US dollar. So toward the end of World War II in 1944, you had the Bretton Woods system that was put in place, pegging the US dollar to the gold standard. And as a result, the US dollar de facto became the global reserve currency. And that lasted for a few decades, right? And then from 1968 to 1973, that system fell apart. And what emerged soon thereafter in its place was the petrodollar. the United States, in secret, made an agreement with Saudi Arabia, right? They told the Saudis, we'll give you weapons, we'll give you security. And in exchange, the Saudis would conduct all oil sales in U.S. dollars and buy up U.S. bonds. 80% of all oil transactions are conducted in U.S. dollars. Around 55% of global reserves are in U.S. dollars. But now, because of the war in Ukraine, that could very well change. We've had several shocking developments in the last week that you would have never imagined before, right? So because of the war in Ukraine, the US, the EU, they have slapped Russia with sanctions to the point that Russia is now the most sanctioned country on earth with well over 5,530 sanctions. The EU sanctioned everything except Russian energy imports because the EU relies on Russia, right? About 40% of their gas comes from Russia. However, the UK, the US, they went ahead and straight up banned Russian energy imports. And even though the US isn't a major importer of Russian oil, that announcement of, oh, we're thinking about banning Russian oil, and then actually banning Russian oil, this caused gas prices and oil prices to skyrocket. Oil went up to around $135 a barrel. That's the highest we've seen since July 2008. Gas prices also went up dramatically, Dutch and British. And now all of a sudden, the U.S. is panicking because the U.S. is a net importer of oil. So their oil bill is going way up. And so in order to drive the price back down, the Americans are trying several things, right? First of all, they called up the Saudis and the Emiratis and asked them, please produce more oil. We need to calm global prices. But turns out Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudi crown prince, he won't even take Joe Biden's phone call. You know, apparently they're unhappy because the United States isn't giving them enough support to kill more Yemenis. Then the United States sent a delegation to Venezuela. Remember, Venezuela sits on the world's largest reserves of oil, and the U.S. used to be one of their top customers, you know, until Bush, Obama, Trump sanctioned them into oblivion. And what's funny here is that for years we've been hearing from the U.S. and their allies that Nicolas Maduro is not the president of Venezuela. Apparently, the president is some guy that no one's ever heard of in Venezuela called Juan Guaido. But now, all of a sudden, when the Americans need oil, now they recognize who's the real president, and they're sending a delegation to beg for oil. And again, who are they talking to? Who's the decision maker? Well, I can tell you it's not Juan Guaido, because they went to speak to none other than Maduro. Now, if the Americans are begging Venezuela for oil and begging Maduro for oil, you know the situation is dire. And on top of that, the Americans have tried other ways to bring down oil prices, right? So all of a sudden, after dragging their feet for well over a year, all of a sudden, the U.S. wants to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal. Wow. So remember, the idea is that they lift sanctions on Iran. Iran can put its oil back on the global market, and then oil prices go down because the supply is increased. Well, that didn't happen because of multiple reasons. Russia demanded a written guarantee that Iran won't be hit with fresh sanctions for maintaining ties with Russia. However, it's also been reported there are additional details that had to be ironed out, the terrorism designations and so on. The point is, this sudden enthusiasm and this rush from the Americans to finish up the deal, it really shows their desperation. And the United States have basically sanctioned so many people, they've sanctioned everyone, that they've backed themselves into a corner. And who has the upper hand now? Russia, Iran, Venezuela. Let me tell you, that is quite the twist, right? You're really seeing the tables turn right before you. And to make matters worse for Washington, Saudi Arabia not only refused to take their calls, but was even contemplating selling oil to China, not in U.S. dollars, but in yuan, in China's currency, the renminbi. So basically saying, bye-bye, petrodollar. Remember, the entire premise behind the greenback's value is that major oil sales, energy sales, are denominated in U.S. dollars. Now, China imported roughly 17% of its oil from Saudi Arabia in 2021, so this is no joke. At the same time, instead of sanctioning Russia like everybody else, New Delhi struck a deal with Moscow for 3 million barrels of crude. Now, the amount is irrelevant because India consumes more than that in a single day. But the fact that India traded with Russia, continued to maintain ties with Russia, bought this oil at a discount and in rupees, rubles, so dealing another blow to the U.S. dollar. So China refuses to sanction Russia. India and Pakistan refuse to sanction Russia. They're continuing to buy gas and oil like normal, right, despite the threats to India that it will also face sanctions. That doesn't sound very isolating, right? That's roughly 40% of the world's population there, refusing to toe the Western narrative, refusing to toe the Western line, I should say. And never mind all the other countries that have also refused to condemn Russia. Just look at this map of who has sanctioned Russia. It's basically EU member states, North America, and Japan, and Australia. So in other words, it's the global north, right? This is where all the world's wealth is hoarded. And, you know, all the countries that have not sanctioned Russia are mostly countries you would consider the global south, right? So there's an interesting pattern right there. Western governments and media, they keep saying the international community is united against Russia. I'm sorry, that's not what it looks like. The West is not the international community, it's the West, or the global north, if you want to use the new terms, right? So as a matter of fact, it goes further than that. Let's look at these two UN votes. On March 2nd, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution condemning Russia. The overwhelming majority of countries did vote to condemn Russia. That's undeniable. But if you look at who abstained, we have Iran, Iraq, China, India, Pakistan, South Africa. Again, that is enormous. That's well over a third of the world's population, you know, above 40%. We're nearing half the world's population. And so later on March 24th, another General Assembly resolution and pretty much the same result. And 2 days before that, on March 22nd, you had a meeting in Moscow between the Russian foreign minister and who? The ambassadors of all the emerging economic powers, the BRICS, right? So you've got the ambassadors of Brazil, India, China, South Africa, meeting in Moscow with Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister. Again, that doesn't really look very isolating to me, does it? So you've got the two most populous countries on Earth, two nuclear powers, meeting in Russia's capital with Lavrov. I bet you didn't hear about that on the BBC. Now, Lavrov actually made his first visit to China since the war began. Just a week later, on March 30th, Lavrov actually visited India on April 1st. And now, India has received many visits, many official visits in the past week. You've had officials from the UK, from Greece, Austria, Mexico. They've all come to India. But the only one that India's Prime Minister Modi met with was Lavrov. And again, that pretty much tells you everything you need to know. But this war in Ukraine hasn't been without its setbacks, right? When we talk about a global realignment, that goes both ways. And so we've seen the European Union openly arming Ukraine. That's unprecedented. Germany, the same thing, right? Germany has broken with its past, with its stated stance of neutrality. And Germany's going even further. It's rearming. And I think this is something that not a lot of people really grasp. They don't understand how serious this is, that Germany is rearming. That never ends up well. The last time Germany rearmed, we had a Second World War, we had the Holocaust, we had 30 million dead in Europe alone. And now Germany is basically doing what Donald Trump wanted it to do, what NATO wanted it to do, which is increase their defense spending from 1.5 to 2% of their GDP. So Germany's announced 100 billion euros for its military. That's more than Russia. This is incredible, and it could have very, very severe repercussions down the road. Now, as soon as the war started, Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan went to Moscow. He not only met with Putin, he also bought 2 million tons of gas and wheat. He refused to condemn Russia at the UN. He refused to sanction Putin. And the Americans took offense to that, right? Because they want countries they can control. And so soon thereafter, Imran Khan unveiled a plot by the United States to oust him, to unseat him from power. Lo and behold, here we are. And Imran Khan has just been ousted via a vote of no confidence. And like all Pakistani prime ministers before him, he didn't get to complete his five-year term. The Americans are like the mafia. They don't forget, and they punished Imran Khan for daring to conduct an independent foreign policy. And that's the grim reality, right? That shifting towards a multipolar world doesn't come without a price, and the American empire will kick and scream and take down as many with it as it can. To punish Russia, we've seen many corporations pulling out, from McDonald's to Instagram, you name it. And among those are credit card giants Visa and MasterCard, which is actually not that smart when you think about it, because what they've basically done is they handed their market share in Russia to China, right? Because as soon as they left, China's UnionPay came into Russia and linked up with Russia's payment system, MIR, M-I-R. And to make things even more interesting, while all this was happening, Iran and Venezuela started talks to link their payment systems to Russia's Mir. So, you know, further enlarging the cooperation, the international cooperation between these countries, further enhancing the economic ties between the axis of resistance, between the global south. So the West attempts to crush Russia's financial system, you know, by freezing roughly half of the Russian central bank's foreign assets. They haven't entirely succeeded, because as a matter of fact, if you look right now at the value of the Russian ruble, it's regained a lot of its value. It's almost back to pre-war levels at 80 rubles to the dollar. And of course, there are people who say, well, this is just artificial, it's just temporary. Yeah, but it's still astounding. You know, Russian President Vladimir Putin told the Russian Central Bank, and he told Gazprom, the state-owned gas company, to come up with a plan by March 31st to make sure that all gas payments from unfriendly countries be conducted in rubles, not euros or dollars. And again, this is a monumental shift, because as we were saying, most oil and energy transactions are denominated in US dollars. Actually, most of Russia's gas sales to Europe are in euros. And so when Putin says unfriendly countries, he's talking mostly about the EU, the US, Japan, Norway, the countries that sanctioned Russia. And that alone helped shore up the value of the ruble, as European countries, which again, collectively, they get 40% of their gas from Russia. So, you know, they have no choice. They have to go now to Gazprom Bank and open an account in rubles, where their euros will be taken. They'll be sold for rubles in their name at the Moscow Stock Exchange, and then pay for the gas, then also used to pay for the gas in their name. So not only does that drive up the demand for rubles, but it's also smart because it means European buyers are now opening accounts at a Russian bank and not the other way around. So this further insulates both the money itself by keeping it in Russia and Gazprom Bank from potential sanctions in the future. And Joe Biden, the US president, he made clear that there will be food shortages as a result of the conflict. Benchmark gas prices have gone through the roof. People in the US are paying $4 a gallon now. And yes, there was already an energy and fuel crisis before the war. But the Americans and the Europeans have essentially taken a bad situation and made it three times worse. Don't go anywhere. We'll continue breaking down the shift to a multipolar world right after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
So as we were looking at the other week in Yemen, when the price of fuel goes up, everything goes up, because fuel is one of the most important commodities and affects everything from healthcare to public transport to groceries. Now, earlier I spoke to Scott Ritter about his take on things. Scott is a former intelligence officer in the U.S. Marine Corps. He also served as a United Nations weapons inspector and offers formidable insight, not just in combat-related matters, but international affairs and what it means exactly, you know, transitioning to a multipolar world.
The war in Ukraine is a cleansing moment, and that, I don't mean that in a good way. You know, it's like let's say you have a forest that's full of trees that are infected with fungus and insects and all that, and then you have a forest fire come through and burn it all down. That's not necessarily a good thing, except that what emerges in the aftermath of that fire is a viable forest with healthy trees that'll grow better and produce and have a better impact on the environment. What existed prior was just a festering cesspool of infection. The world today is a festering cesspool of infection because of the United States, because of our efforts to impose unilateral hegemony over the world. Ukraine, you know, you can't make the transition from that to what Russia and China are seeking to do without a forest fire. And Ukraine is that forest fire. And it's sad for the Ukrainian people. It's sad for the world. But I think that, for instance, Russia's economic addiction to the West is being broken because of this. The impetus necessary to get Russia to make the strategic pivot away from the West to China and Eurasia is only happening because of this. The liberation of the Russian government from the economic infection of Western influence and the role played by the oligarchs. This is a cleansing moment. There is going to be a radical realignment of centers of gravity in the world. The singular polarity that exists is being broken apart, and it's going to be spread out. And BRICS is probably the initial model of where these centers of gravity are going to, the new centers of gravity are going to emerge.
So, you know, the Russians have demanded that quote unquote unfriendly countries start paying for gas in rubles, right? So Hungary, they've just announced that they will follow, they will comply. And they're effectively breaking ranks with the EU in saying that. Do you think there's going to be a domino effect? Do you think the other countries will follow suit?
Absolutely. They have no choice. Austria. How does Austria think it's going to get its gas? Austria is going to be paying in rubles. The Vatican is going to be paying in rubles. Slovakia is going to be paying in rubles. And Germany is going to be paying in rubles. They claim they're not going to be, but when the economic reality of what's about to happen to Germany hits home, and I would be willing to put money on the fact that Scholz won't survive the year.
Well, how long do you think that people in the West will tolerate these conditions? You know, higher gas prices, higher food prices. You know, just for the sake of what's being sold in the media as, oh, we're projecting European values and Western values. I mean, how long do you think this is going to go on for? Do you think, you know, there will come a breaking point, or do you think the media are so good at propagandizing people that everyone's just going to tolerate it?
You know, the media works when people come home and they have heat, they have food, and they have comfort. The media doesn't work when you come home and you're cold and you're hungry and you're uncomfortable. There's no amount of propaganda that can change those realities. And the, you know, how long is this going to last until the next election? It's over. There's not a single democracy that will have its current government survive the next election if this policy stays in place and their and the economies of that country tank. No government will survive a tanking economy. None. Now, in the United States, we don't have a parliamentarian system. So it's pretty much accepted right now that the Congress, that we have a midterm election coming up in November, and that the Republicans are going to gain control of Congress because the Democrats can't spend this. No matter how much Americans claim they support the Ukrainians, at the end of the day, high gas prices, high food prices are going to basically dictate that the government in power has failed.
So Russia have pegged the ruble to gold. What do you make of that?
Russia has done something very clever. I mean, how many people before this crisis thought that that Putin would link the ruble to the gold standard? But it happened, and it was a genius move, because now the ruble, believe it or not, is dictating it. Because the price of gold used to be linked to the dollar. I mean, you know, it's all based upon the dollar. But now, by saying that I think it's 5,000 rubles are worth a half a gram of gold or something like that, that value doesn't change. At the end of the day, 5,000 rubles are worth this much gold. And so now it's the dollar that is linked to the ruble, and he's flipped the script. And again, this isn't a temporary measure designed to... If there hadn't been the divorce of the economies, then I would say there's a chance that this is just games. But there's been the divorce of the economy. So there's literally no impetus, no reason for Russia to play temporary games, because they're not going back to the dollar. They're not going back to the euro. They're not going back to the way things were. They're starting anew. This is about empowering the ruble to function in a trans-Eurasian market. Not in an American market, not in a European market, but in a trans-Eurasian market, as part and parcel of a currency flux that includes the yuan, the rupee, and other currencies as co-equal currencies of joint, you know, that can be jointly traded. No, Russia, this is the new reality.
You know, let's be clear. This isn't like sanctioning Syria or Iran or Venezuela. The U.S. and the EU, they're so used to bullying smaller countries with zero consequences. But this time, the sanctions go both ways. You know, these bureaucrats in Brussels, they're ready to hurt their own people just to spite Russia. But of course, it's okay for them because they're not the ones who are going to lose their jobs or feel the bite of higher gas prices and food prices. Russia isn't an economic giant like the United States, but it does play a strategic role, and it supplies a good chunk of Europe's gas. You can't just go, yeah, we're going to punish the Russians and forget about it. The ripple effect is going to be enormous. And the West have really shot themselves in the foot, right? Sure, they think they're punishing Russia in the short term, but in the long term, they've helped to speed up the process of de-dollarization and the emergence of a stronger Asia. You know, the West are basically begging Russia and China to find alternatives to SWIFT, to conduct oil and gas sales in denominations other than the US dollar, so either in rupees, rubles, or renminbi. Just to give you another example, on April 8th, China began buying coal and oil from Russia in renminbi. Again, the West are pushing Russia into China's arms and encouraging the global South to break free of the Western financial and monetary system, and proving just how important China's Belt and Road Initiative and greater Eurasia will be in the future. It's astonishing how the war in Ukraine has led to so many changes on a global scale and sped up the transition to a multipolar world, undermining U.S. hegemony in the process. Now again, no one is saying at the flick of a switch, we're gonna wake up tomorrow and find a multipolar world, but things certainly appear to be shifting in that direction at a faster pace than ever before. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. Hundreds of people have held protest after police in Grand Rapids, Michigan, released three videos of a white police officer shooting a black man dead. Patrick Loyal, 26, was fatally shot on April 4th in what activists refer to as the latest example of police violence against young black men. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article written by Nina Lakhani titled, "That Was My Beloved Son." Family of Patrick Loya say police killed their son in an execution. Please stay with us to hear more about the details. the grief-stricken parents of the black man shot in the back of the head by a white Michigan police officer have described their son's death as an execution. Patrick Loyo, 26-year-old Congolese refugee, was killed after a traffic stop in Grand Rapids on April 4th. His father, Peter Loya, on Thursday, April 14th, through an interpreter, said, "I didn't believe that there is a genocide in this country," adding, "I didn't know that here in America there can be execution style to be killed by the police officer." The Loya family came to the U.S. fleeing violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2014. Patrick, a factory worker, was the eldest of six children and had two young daughters. Video footage released by the Grand Rapids police chief on Wednesday, April 13th, shows a short foot chase on a residential street after Loya ran from the officer who stopped him for driving with a license plate that didn't belong to the vehicle. They are shown briefly struggling over the officer's taser before he apparently shoots Loya in the back of the head while kneeling on his back. Peter Loya said, "It made me cry to see my son killed by a police officer for a small mistake," adding, "My heart was really broken. My life was Patrick, my son. I was thinking Patrick will take my place, and to see that my son was killed like an animal by this U.S. police officer." Lawyers for the family said the officer should be prosecuted, fired, and named. Peter said Patrick's brothers and sisters want to know who killed him and would like to see his picture so they can know this is the person that took our beloved one. The officer has been placed on paid leave with his police powers suspended while Michigan State Police conduct a criminal investigation. Police bosses have said he will not be identified publicly unless there are criminal charges. A rally took place in Grand Rapids on Friday, April 15th, as protests supporting the family's call for justice have grown since the video footage was released. But prosecutor Chris Becker, who will decide whether any charges are brought against the 7-year veteran officer and had objected to the footage being released, said not to expect a quick decision. Grand Rapids is a small city of about 200,000 people located about 150 miles northwest of Detroit, where, like many places in the U.S., the police have faced criticism over the use of excessive force, particularly against black people, who made up 18% of the population. At the news conference inside Renaissance Church of God in Christ in Grand Rapids on Thursday, April 14th, Loyal's parents explained that they sought asylum in the U.S. looking for safety after years of civil unrest and violence at home in eastern Congo. His mother, Dorcas Loya, told the Free Press through translator, "They told us that in America there is peace, there is safety, you're not going to see killing anymore, that it was basically a safe haven," adding, "What is so surprising? The man supposed to be protecting us is the one who shot my son," she said. "That was my beloved son. You know how my love, your firstborn son." The family were accompanied by their attorneys and the mother of Breonna Taylor, a black woman, a native of Grand Rapids, shot dead inside her home by police in Louisville, Kentucky in 2020. Ben Crump, a prominent civil rights lawyer who has represented several victims of police violence, as Patrick's parents wept, said, "The video shows us that this is, as his mother and father have said, an execution, and there is no way to spin it or justify," adding, "It is an unjustifiable use of deadly force because the police escalated a traffic stop into an execution." Crump said the officer could have waited for backup when Loyal ran out, but instead got violent. He accused the unidentified officer of breaking protocol by using taser while close to Loyal, adding that it was natural instinct for Loyal to try to avoid being stunned. Crom said there was no reason for the officer to have any intimate fear of the taser being used against him. The Loya family first escaped from DRC to Malawi, where they were granted asylum to live in the U.S. In recent years, Congolese people have become the largest group settled in Michigan, overtaking refugees from West Asia after Donald Trump made it virtually impossible for Arab and Muslim people to gain asylum in the U.S. The family lawyers pointed to the language barriers Congolese and others face when dealing with police. Crom said, "We were condemning Takfiri terrorists for shooting civilians in Iraq and Syria in the back of the head," adding, "Why aren't we condemning police officers here in the United States of America shooting black civilians in the back of the head? If it was wrong in Iraq and Syria, it's wrong in Grand Rapids, Michigan." Dorcas described her eldest son as the type of person you would want to be around and said he would often make her laugh. "Details of the funeral are expected soon," Dorcas said. "As a parent, I was thinking that maybe it was my son who was going to bury me, assist me at my funeral," adding, "But it is astonishing. I am the one burying my son." Hundreds of people have held protests after police in Grand Rapids, Michigan, released three videos of the white police officer shooting the black man dead. The three videos were taken from the dashboard of the officer's squad car, from his body-worn camera, and from a neighbor's surveillance camera. After the videos were released on Wednesday, April 13th, demonstrators marched through the city's downtown carrying Black Lives Matter placards and chanted, "No justice, no peace." Brian Foster, a black man who attended the demonstration, said, "I don't think the establishment are ever gonna listen to us," adding, "It's in their best interest not to. It's in their best interest to keep this war against my people going forever." Meanwhile, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, issued a written statement saying, "Another black man has died at the hands of police, and the officer in this video has got to be held accountable." The NAACP said President Biden signed the police reform executive order now. While we fully understand an executive order is not a substitute for meaningful legislation, we must do everything in our power to protect our community. Massive protests have been held across the country following the killings of African-American men, George Floyd and Daunte Wright, by white police officers in 2020. Floyd's death in May 2020 sparked angry protests across the U.S. and across the world. The protests evolved into a nationwide battle between progressives and far-right groups after former President Donald Trump took a hardline stance against the anti-racism protests.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم to another program of the Youth Station at IRIB English Radio.
Waalaikum assalam, brother.
Oh, you're here.
Yes, I'm here as well.
Right, so in the studio, we've got Sister Asma here.
Now welcome. I know that I have the talent of being invisible.
Yeah, well, that's a superpower that many people wish. Well, some people are invisible, like me, invisible. No one realizes that I exist, right?
No, but no. That's now another kind visible.
Of invisible.
Do not underestimate your powers. You're visible.
That's actually a good thing that you mentioned, invisible. Do you think people, young people, right, they
spend
less time with their families, more time outside with their mates because they've always been home and no one sees them anymore, right? They feel invisible. Now they want some attention, so they start spending
still,
less time at home.
My answer is, of course.
Right.
Still, I'm saying that. Nowadays, children need more attention.
Why?
Or let's just change it. Let's rephrase what I just said.
Right.
Nowadays, youth need more attention.
Yeah, but why?
Because they spend most of their time in their media. And but we have a media. Most of the time, they're spending their time with their friends through those,
social media platforms.
Exactly. And then the parents do not get to have a time to speak to their children.
Yeah, but the problem is the parents themselves are busy on their Instagrams and their Facebooks and their
So there their must be YouTubes a solution for that. There must be a time that the family is spending together.
Right. So, and okay, why heading to the fasting first, why are these youngsters, why the lads or girls,
Prefer to be with
their friends. Why do you want to be with their friends more than they want to be with
because
their families?
They could feel at home. They could say everything
to
them.
That's an oxymoron. Like, they feel at home outside of their home.
Though they're not at home.
Yeah.
Yes. It's why? Ironical, but why? That's the truth. Because they're of their age, they understand each other more, they have the language to chit-chat, and when they speak, nobody is there to give them advices. Okay, don't do that. No, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah,
that's not true. What you're doing is not true.
Mm-hmm. Always the negative. Nagging at home.
Yes.
They're sick of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Always the negative sentences they hear. I think that's the reason. Now I have a younger brother. Then anytime I talk to him in a way that is more aggressive, I just address him. Don't do this. Don't do that.
How old is he?
20.
Right.
But
well, he's a grown man. You talk to him like that. Come on,
I don't consider, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. Ladies and gentlemen, we have our answer.
Here we are.
The problem is that a 20-year-old grown man at home, his elder sister talks to him as if he's a little kid. Which is why kids leave their houses.
No, let's be fair. Parents do not consider
their exactly what
children.
I'm saying. Let's be fair.
Yes. I'm going to clarify the situation for you. He's grown up, but still there's so many dangers outside the world, you know? And maybe at the age of 20, you do not have that much of experience in living. And then you might go for things that are wrong, yet you think they are right.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
If the parents are speaking to their children or to the youth in a way that it seems so imperative, that is not what exactly they mean to say. You know what I mean? I mean, what they are doing...
But you're not there constantly.
It's the protecting system.
Yeah, I know. What I'm saying is, you're not always there with that youth. Like, you are not there. Your sister Asma is not there with every youth all the time. Explaining to him, telling him that what your mom just said to you, she didn't mean it in that manner. She meant it in this manner, right?
I mean, the youth must know that. You know, you should come to that sort, that much of logic. You should grow that much of logic in your brain and your the way you think.
Here we are.
To come to the conclusion that, okay, what they are saying is for my good.
Yeah, but put yourself in their shoes, right? Why does everyone else know what's good for me and I don't, right? So this guy's out there, he's
because you're in an age that your eyes are getting blind. You know what I mean? We have been there.
Yeah.
We have already been there.
Fair enough. Yeah, but you've been there, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine yourself being there and everyone telling you, you don't know. All right,
I pay
man.
No heed, of course, but...
I actually remember my own mindset, and I was like, right, fair enough. If I don't know, I'll learn. Let me learn, you know? Mm-hmm. Let me learn. Why is everyone trying to teach me?
Like, there is a code that reminded me of a code that said, I don't want to know and to hear that the sands of the shore are soft. I want my bare foot to touch that. That's what happens with the youth. They don't want to hear that something is wrong. They want to experience that it is wrong.
Yeah, they want to. Yeah, they want to get beat right, and then realize. I think that's one of the reasons why. Because when they're out with their friends, there's no constant nagging.
Exactly.
Right?
There's no borderline. There is no restrictions, and
yeah,
they're just like you. Maybe they do love doing those wrong things.
And that's one of the things. You do pick your friends who are similar to you, mm-hmm. or have the same interests as you, or who look upon you. For example, you know, look
yes.
up to you, right?
Exactly.
Some people like attention, right? A lot of people like attention.
And they would be your partner in whatever crime you wish to do.
Yeah, either...
The parents would never do that for you.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Either you're being followed, either they're following your footsteps or you're following theirs.
Exactly.
Right? So you're hand in hand and you're doing whatever you're doing together. And there is no constant reminder of responsibilities or mm-hmm. being serious in life and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yes.
And...
So the why of the question that asks why the youth spend more time with their friends and not with their family now is very much clear. It's because the other youth that are being their friend listens to them more mm-hmm. and would yeah. participate in whatever they ask them to.
We talked about a problem. Mm-hmm. We talked about why the problem's there. Let's talk about how to deal with it.
The solutions. Mm. Well, I would say... It's good for parents to look at their youth.
You know what I'd say?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's whatever you do to your brother, don't.
Thank you for selling that in that very much easy manner. Thank you. And the problem is solved. Thank you.
Yeah.
Joking aside, that is very difficult to nurture your youth.
You know,
it's very difficult to understand the language of the people who have so much of enthusiasm and so much of, the power of the youngsters.
Scholars of upbringing. I don't know if that's a word. Mm.
They're mostly psychologists.
Yeah, psychologists. I am going to say.
But their major has been specified in a way that they work only with the youth
child upbringing,
and the childhood.
Yeah. They say that when a guy, a girl, they hit 16,
mm-hmm.
That's it for them. Now you might just politely tell them a few things, but their personality has been shaped now.
Yes.
The skeleton has been formed and the bones have been solidified.
So you cannot change much about them, right?
No, you can't, right? The only way... now, it's never too late, that's true, right? And subtle advice or stuff like that may help. But if one wants to reach perfection in terms of parenting or upbringing, it starts right at the beginning. We'll not talk about what Islam says. It says while you choose a spouse. But we're not talking about marriage or stuff like that. We're talking about why people do not like spending time at home.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
What you say, I guess I understood what you're going to say. You mean that we should start from the very first square. When there are kids, we have to start it there.
Yeah. I'm going to take a break from talking. Are you tired?
No, of course
not. Oh, well, I am tired.
Because we're having some very interesting stuff. We discussed on some very... good things.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Shall we carry on?
No.
Another thing that we do with children is we do not respect them.
And that's very important.
Yeah, you know, we
don't. They understand respect.
Yeah, and parents, you see parents complaining about children not respecting them, mm-hmm. right? Hello?
They have not learned that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you had respected their child at that young age, he would have learned what respect is, right?
Exactly.
Every individual has self-respect. And a child who's been shunned at a very young age over and over and over, he's going to be rebellious. I don't blame the child, right? So the first thing first, respect the opinion of a child.
Yes. And give them the chance to show and prove themselves to you. Maybe that way they're going to build a relationship with you.
Yeah. That is the main focus, mm-hmm. building a relationship with that child, right? In a sense that he feels comfortable with you, he or she or it or they. Oh, God, these days you have to specify. Yeah, so you have to be very, what do you call it? Yeah, so you need to form a personality. Mm-hmm. You need to give them the respect. You need to put that, they need to have the confidence to speak to you.
Exactly.
They know that when I go and talk to my mom or dad about an issue, I'm not going to get slapped in return.
She would understand me. Yeah, at least she would put herself in my place.
Yeah, I had a friend, I remember, he passed away. May Allah forgive him.
God bless him.
His relationship with his mom was mind-blowing, you know. No matter what he had done, he'd hit his car, he'd crash his car, he'd do whatever.
The first person he would go to is his mother.
He was being chased by the police, and he called his mom that I'm being chased by the police.
That's very good.
So
such parents, please.
Yeah, so yeah, if I'm not providing my child with a secure environment, with a loving environment, with a friendly, respectable environment at home, don't blame the child if he leaves the home, he goes around.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, dear youth, who were talking about whatever you wish to have, the parents that are going to respect you and that are going to build a relationship with you like friends.
All right, guys, listeners, please excuse us. I've been talking for too long. Thank you for being here.
Yes,
and
thank you, everyone.
And formalities over. Take care. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Yes, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator. My Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.